WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this October 7th, 2016. We are so glad you've allowed Current Sports to close out your week, and we plan on doing it with a bang, folks. Can you believe that the weekend is almost upon us? So we'll talk a ton of college football, of course, and we'll get you prepped and ready for the big Michigan State and BYU game that will get underway, at home at Spartan Stadium tomorrow afternoon, a 3:36 p.m. kickoff. Also, Michigan will be in action tomorrow night against Rutgers. We will preview both the Spartans and the Wolverines on the gridiron. And hey, folks, we will invite to today's show, fresh off of Media Day, Mr. Tom Anastas, who is the head coach of the Michigan State hockey team. The season just around the corner. And the green and white game will actually take place on 4 p.m. On Sunday. So Tom will give us a preview of what his team looks like this upcoming year. And it is filled with a ton of youth, folks. So you don't want to miss that on the second segment of our show. And on the back end of the show, of course, we will reflect on the week that has been in the world of sports by bringing you some of our favorite moments, interviews, and maybe a few stories that we didn't get a chance to chat about here on our airwaves throughout the week. We call it Reflection Friday, all right? If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know how you can do that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, let's give you guys a heads up first. On week 7 of the high school football mid-Michigan scene, can you believe it already? It's week 7. Wow, it's nuts to me. After this week, we got 2 more weeks of high school football, folks. Wow, all right. A few local matchups that are intriguing, to say the least, right? Lansing Sexton at East Lansing. DeWitt, led by quarterback Will Nagel, who has 13 touchdowns, is at St. John's. Waverly features wideout Kai Tackett, who has racked up 520 yards, is at Hazlitt. Grand Ledge at Everett. Portland at Williamston. Stockbridge at Olivet. Of course, Mason G. Montgomery continues to pile up the stats now with 1,341 yards and 25 touchdowns on 98 completions. That's redonkulous. Bath at Fulton. Fowler at Dansville. But this week's feel-good story comes from the Eaton Rapids and Lansing Catholic matchup. The two teams who will battle on the field have come together to honor 3-year-old Caleb Becker, a child from Eaton Rapids who was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Yeah, David Hart, a senior from Lansing Catholic, reached out to Eaton Rapids AD Jeff DeSantis to create an orange out for Friday night's game. Both student sections will wear orange, and Lansing Catholic players will wear orange long sleeve shirts that say Caleb Strong. What a scene that will be tonight, folks. All right, moving along here. Michigan State will host BYU tomorrow on the football field at Spartan Stadium at 3:30 p.m. The Spartans are coming off an overtime loss against the Indiana Hoosiers. Every game BYU has played has come down to the wire with a ton of points scored. Now, the Cougars are 2-3 this year, and their 3 losses have been by a combined 7 points. Their 2 wins against Arizona and Toledo have come from game-winning field goals as time expired. Now, the Spartans will be without starting defensive tackle Malik McDowell for the first half because of a suspension. McDowell was ejected from a targeting call late in the game against the Hoosiers. MSU will also be without injured starting linebackers John Reschke and Riley Bulla. Starting defensive tackle Raekwon Williams will also miss this game due to a left arm injury. The 2-2 Spartans still have a lot to play for this season. Technically, they are favored by 6 points, but are 1-3 against covering the spread this year. All right, the Michigan Wolverines, who are currently ranked fourth in the country, will play their first road game of the year. It's about time, right, as they travel to New Jersey to face Rutgers at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. Now, the Wolverines are fresh off a 14-7 dub against the Wisconsin Badgers, whereas the Scarlet Knights, get this, they lost 58-0 last weekend to Ohio State. Just a shellacking, folks. Michigan is favored by 30 points and are currently 5-0 and have won by an average of 32 points per game. That's called dominance. The Michigan State hockey team will play their green and white game scrimmage this Sunday at 4 p.m. at Mount Ice Arena. There is no need to buy tickets because, hey, it's free. That's my favorite word in the English dictionary, folks. After the game, there will be a full team meet and greet. The Spartans then begin the season at Lake Superior State for a two-game series on Friday and Saturday. The Detroit Lions take on the Philadelphia Eagles this Sunday at Ford Field. Last Thanksgiving, the Lions blew out the Eagles 45-14. That probably won't be the case this year, though. These are two teams headed in opposite directions. Carson Wentz and the undefeated Eagles have wins against Cleveland, Chicago, and Pittsburgh, while Matt Stafford and the Lions are off to a disappointing 1-3 start with a most recent loss to the Chicago Bears. And possibly more impressive than Wentz's hot start has been the Philly defense has only given up 27 points and no passing touchdowns. Wow. The Lions have a list of notable names that did not practice yesterday, which include Ziggy Ansah, Eric Ebron, DeAndre Levy, Dwayne Washington, and Marvin Jones. The D takes on Philly Sunday at 1 p.m. on Fox. The Detroit Red Wings play the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight at 7 p.m. The Wings will be without Dylan Larkin, Henrik Zetterberg, Justin Abdelkader, Nicholas Cromwell, Gustav Nyquist, Tomas Tatar, and many others. Jimmy Howard will get the start in the net. Head coach Jeff Blashill is going to give some younger players a chance to make some impressions. The Wings are currently 4-1-1 in preseason play. Their last preseason game will be tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Joe. The Wings open up the regular season on the road on Thursday when they play the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Detroit Pistons fell 101-94 to Linsanity and the Brooklyn Nets last night. That's right. Jeremy Lin is back, ladies and gents. He led all scorers with 21 points and shot 5 of 8 from three-point land. Reggie Jackson is out 6 to 8 weeks, so Ish Smith assumed the starting role and totaled 4 points, 3 assists, 2 boards, and 27 minutes. Andre Drummond picked up his first double-double of preseason play, scoring 17 points and had 21 boards. Just another day at the office for Andre Drummond. Detroit's second preseason game is on Monday versus San Antonio. And last but not least, New York Knicks point guard Derrick Rose. Yeah, folks, he appeared in court for the first time yesterday as his ex-girlfriend was testifying against Rose and his two friends. He arrived roughly 1 hour late. Now, Jane Doe, as she is being referred to, went into gruesome detail, tearing up as she went on about the night that she said Rose and two other men allegedly raped her. Now, the jury for the trial consists of 6 women and 2 men. Rose was absent from jury selection earlier in the week and chose to play in the Knicks' first preseason game instead. No criminal charges have been filed against Rose or the other men, but LA police continue to investigate. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to comment on those or anything on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. Let's start the show.
Well, I got explanations. We got explanations, and but you know, I can't really talk about those things, guys. So, you know, what's done is done. I can't change it. I don't think it was. I mean, I don't know how you play football anymore sometimes. But you know, I have a good relationship with the people in the Big Ten office with Bill Parolo, and you know, he does the very best that he can, and I think it's a well-run organization that tries to look at every facet of a football game and make good decisions. But ultimately, the decisions are made at the game, and there is no appeal process with this, so that's a difficult situation to handle, but it's the way it is. So.
That is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Friday. Happy, happy Friday. That's right. You have made it. Those still on the clock listening to Current Sports, first off, thank you. That's dedication, right? But hey, you're just a few hours away from the weekend. So we're going to get you locked and loaded for a great weekend. When it comes to local sports, of course, week 7 of high school football takes place tonight. It's flying by, folks. I really can't believe it. Pretty soon, we're going to be talking about, you know, it's going to be around Thanksgiving. We're going to be talking about state championship games at Ford Field. Unbelievable stuff, right? Michigan State will try and shake off that Oogle loss to the Indiana Hoosiers on the road last weekend. Yeah. Try and get that bad losing taste out of their mouths when they play an out-of-conference matchup against Brigham Young at Spartan Stadium. Interesting game here, folks. Now, what you just heard, Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team, as he addressed Malik McDowell, Michigan State star defensive tackle, who was assessed a penalty in the fourth quarter of that 24-21 OT loss against the Hoosiers. And, you know, you look at that hit. You know, he was assessed a penalty because the referees thought that it was, they thought it was targeting. And, you know, if you look at the play, you know, you see Hoosiers quarterback, Richard Lego, throw the pass. Dow, in my opinion, hit him right in the chest. With his helmet, drove him to the ground. Now, according to the NCAA rulebook, a hit is ruled targeting if it involves, quote, forcible contact against an opponent with the crown of his helmet, end quote. And, of course, Coach D was asked immediately after the game whether or not he thought that the hit was fair or foul, and whether or not Malik McDowell deserved to be ejected from that game. And D'Antonio said that he needed to see the hit on film before really evaluating it. So what you just heard was his comments after evaluating the film. During his Tuesday press conference at Spartan Stadium in the north end zone. And it's funny because Coach D kind of wrote the fits, but he also gave you a very honest answer as well. You know, the part of that bite where he said, I don't know how you play the game of football anymore in today's game. That was a pretty honest, a pretty candid statement from Coach D. Because I've seen the play multiple times, and I feel like there's a lot of gray area surrounded around what exactly is targeting in the game of football. Again, forcible contact against an opponent with the crown of his helmet. And it looks like they've expanded what the crown is. It looks like they're calling the crown, you know, from the very start of the forehead on up. That's what it looks like the rule is dictating here. Looking at the play, to me, I didn't think it was fair. My opinion, though. I didn't think it was. I just thought with looking at that play in real time, in real action, I didn't see how there was really any way that Malik McDowell could have led up or pulled up on the hit and not made the kind of contact that he did, bang, bang type of play that he did against quarterback Richard Leygo. Can't cry over spilt milk, though, so what's done is done. And Malik McDowell will have to sit the first half against Brigham Young. Yeah, folks. So when you look at this upcoming game, we're going to preview that game right now. And the first thing that really stands out in this game, other than the fact that Michigan State is 2-2 on the year, that Michigan State, for the first time since 2007, has began the conference season 0-2. Of course, they desperately need this game, okay? And you go against a BYU team that you know you can put up points against because that defense is so porous, okay, folks? So porous. This is a great game to get Michigan State back on track. This is a great rebound game, okay? But I can't ignore the injuries that this team is going through and the names who are going to be absent this weekend. For me, again, you look at guys, as I mentioned, our headliners, linebacker John Reschke. He's not going to play. He's still dealing with that left ankle. Also, Riley Bulla, who was injured, I guess, during that Notre Dame game. That's being said to be a right shoulder injury. You look at defensive tackle Raekwon Williams, who in my estimation had a great start to the year. Great start to the year. He's out. Left arm injury. And again, I mentioned Malik McDowell. He's on suspension. He's out in the first half at least. Listed as probable on the depth chart right now, quarterback Darian Hicks with that right hip injury that we saw him injure on a deep pass route when he was playing defense, and he landed awkwardly in the right side of the end zone against Indiana. His right arm went under him and hit his hip, and then he was down in immediate pain. So he's probable. I assume Darian is going to play tomorrow afternoon. How about linebacker Chris Fry? Fantastic player. He's probable. Left arm injury. Center Brian Allen. We saw him go out against Indiana. He's got a right arm injury. He's listed as probable. And also listed as probable is running back LJ Scott. Left leg. And we saw LJ go out against Indiana and come back in. And this is the thing. Going back to the point I've been making this year so far. Not having the luxury of a mid to late year bye week just to heal up and recuperate, taking that bye in week two, you don't have that luxury of resting and getting healthy now. So they're going to have to deal with these injuries and just have to cross their fingers and hope that they don't linger as the year moves along here. So a few things to watch in this game. Again, we all know that Michigan State needs a dub. Simple as that. They got to go out here, you know, put it in simplest terms here. They got to win tomorrow afternoon. Okay? You know, a lot of it there's so many ways you can break this down because, you know, you look at how drives have gone for them. And let's mention third downs for just a sec here. MSU's early season struggles when it comes to third down situations have been very glaring. Very glaring. And if you look at the last few games here, a lot of that has to do with not having a great run game. Michigan State's run game, which looked pretty solid to start the year, especially against Notre Dame, it's gone absent. Now, it's got to do with a lot of things here. I think that the offensive line has to play better. That offensive line is not getting a lot of push and not creating a lot of holes for guys like LJ Scott and Gerald Holmes, who hasn't been getting a lot of carries, frankly, this year. They aren't getting the holes that they need to run through right now. So that has a lot to do. That has a direct correlation to Tyler O'Connor right now because of his comfort level. Tyler O'Connor is clearly not comfortable in the pocket right now. And the numbers are showing it. The inaccuracies are showing it. And, you know, you hear about all the criticism surrounded around him. But I just want to let it be known, folks, that Tyler O'Connor is not just, he's not the only man on this Michigan State football roster who's playing under par. Okay? We all know Tyler O'Connor has struggled this year. But what has a direct correlation to his comfort level in the pocket is an established run game. And so I'm looking for that to improve. And I don't know how healthy LJ Scott is. I would like to see Gerald Holmes get more carries, though. I'm really puzzled because if you look at the carries that Gerald Holmes, if you look at the carries he got against Indiana, I think he carried the ball, what, one time against Indiana, Isaac? One time. One time for Gerald Holmes. That's really shocking to me because if you look at what Gerald was able to do specifically against Notre Dame, I really thought we're going to see at least, you know, maybe a 70-30 kind of workload in relation to LJ Scott and Gerald Holmes. We haven't seen that. Going back to third down, though, MSU's offense is 8 for 28 in the past two games on third down, including 4 for 15 against Indiana's spotty defense. That's not going to get it done, okay? Simple as that. BYU, again, if you look at BYU's schedule here, and you just look at the numbers, I mean, teams have put up big numbers against this team, all right? Look at last weekend against Toledo. Toledo was able to put, 53 points against that BYU defense. Week prior to that, BYU actually lost this game. Prior to that, the Toledo game, actually, they lost three straight. But if you look at West Virginia was able to put up 35 points against that defense. So Michigan State can score against this defense. And this is why if you're Tyler O'Connor, regardless of all the criticism that this man has been getting throughout this season, you have to look at a matchup like this and you have to be chomping at the bit to get on the football field to play the Cougars. Because there's room and ample opportunity for you to throw up big numbers and to get this offense into some sort of groove, okay? So in my opinion, now moving forward here, I think Michigan State beats BYU, and I think they do it by at least 10 points, Isaac. I think it's going to be closer than a lot of people perceive. I mean, heck, we were it was just a week ago, and we were sitting here on the airwaves talking about the Indiana game, and we were throwing out. Well, I think against Indiana, I predicted a close. I think you did. You predict a blowout, Isaac?
I didn't predict a blowout. No,
I forget. Somebody did. Well, you know, when all else fails, I think, you know, blame the guy who's not here. So I think it might have been Zachary Barnes.
It's Zach.
I don't know. It may have been Zach. Who knows?
He's an idiot. You know. I mean, it's just that.
Zach,
simple.
We love you. Zach is sick actually today. But what do you think about this matchup, Isaac? Before we bring in Zach Swizicki as well as Griffin Wasik to preview this game.
Yeah, BYU's a tough team to really figure out and wrap your head around because they started off the season with an impressive win against Arizona, a team that made people predicted would have a pretty decent run at things, but then they fell three straight games, as you mentioned, and throughout, it was either the offense that was doing fine or the offense that was letting them down, because against Utah, they only gave up 20 points. Against UCLA, they only gave up 17. In those games, they respectively scored 19 and 14 points, and then you mentioned against West Virginia, a good team. Offense wasn't the problem whatsoever. That was all defense, and then they scraped by Toledo. So, BYU, Taysom Hill at the quarterback position, a senior, somebody who can control the games, but has had a much tougher go at things than I expected him to. I actually knew the name heading into this season. So the BYU offense has been so mercurial that it's really difficult to figure out. Now, when it comes to MSU, that's where the question mark is for me, because you mentioned how the BYU defense has been suffering recently. I don't think that's a good thing for MSU. I think if you're a defense who has been struggling, MSU is the team that you want to play right now. You can see Tyler O'Connor devoid of confidence a little bit. The play calling maybe still a little bit on the rocks, just trying to figure out where your strength is as a team. So I think this is a good boding of circumstances for BYU. I think it's coming together quite nicely. At the same time, MSU is the better team here. There's a reason that Michigan State was ranked number 8 heading into the regular season, or heading into the Wisconsin game, rather. There's a reason that this team has gotten so much attention and awards through year after year. There's a reason for all of that, but because of injuries, because of all of that, I think it's even closer than you do. BYU this season is 4-1 against the spread. The spread 6. I've got a 3-point game, and I've got low scoring, 20-17 in favor of the Spartans.
Wow, you think it's going to be a dogfight? I don't know about that one. But I will say, if you look at last week against Toledo, I mean, BYU allowed Toledo quarterback Logan Woodside to throw for 505 yards last week. Tyler O'Connor, do your thing, dude. Let it fly. And again, this has a lot to do with the play calling as well.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Let the leash off of them. You know, let them throw some deep routes here and there. I mean, why not? You're going to get to BYU pass defense that is just porous left and right. And BYU, if you look at the offense for BYU, though, and you go look at the MSU defense, I'm worried about that because BYU has put up over, 500 yards in each of his last two games, okay? That offense can score, you know what I mean? So, especially with all the injuries, that's what I'm really worried about in this game because that MSU defense is going to have to really man up, clog up the holes, and you look at the how Michigan State has been able to get really no pass rush, has really not been able to stop the run game. Jamal Williams for BYU had a huge game against Toledo. He rushed 30 times for 286 yards, 5 touchdowns. It's the third game of at least 160 yards rushing for Williams. That's going to be tough. Let's bring in Zach and also Griffin right now. Let's start with Griffin. What do you think about this matchup, Griffin?
Well, I think it's very interesting, Al, because as everyone brought up, the Spartans are going to be without huge defensive names and defensive players. John Reschke, Riley Bulla, and Raekwon Williams are all studs. And, I mean, you've seen it against Indiana and Wisconsin of them exploiting the middle there. I mean, BYU running back Jamal Williams is an absolute beast. He has over 700 yards, 8 touchdowns. And, I mean, I think BYU is just going to exploit those holes and run up the middle, give Williams his touches. He's definitely going to get the yards and everything like that. And then Taysom Hill, he's a huge dual-threat quarterback. I mean, he ran for over 100 yards against West Virginia. He ran for over 90 yards against Utah. He has a huge arm. And then, as you see with the MSU secondary, I mean, we say it every week, mm-hmm. Hicks, Copeland, Nicholson, Cox, I mean, they can't cover down the field. So I honestly think BYU wide receiver Nick Kurtz, who's 6'6", and a huge matchup nightmare, is going to exploit Hicks. I mean, you've seen it week in and week out of
teams just pick on Hicks
and just throw them downfield. Now, that being said, the MSU play calling, I agree there. You got to let O'Connor show us what he can do, throw the ball downfield with Corley and Shelton. But then in terms of the running game, LJ Scott, he loves to run the ball outside and get outside. But every single play call with him is down the middle, mm-hmm. which I honestly don't understand. Every single time on first down, you run straight up the gut with LJ. And I think you got to get him going outside, switch it up a little bit on first down, actually throw the ball on first down with O'Connor.
I like that. Zach?
Yeah, play calling has been subpar. I joked on Twitter, I think Dave Warner is like a 60-year-old playing Madden mm-hmm. with his play calling.
Conservative, right? Very old school, round and pound.
Exactly.
Pretty predictable.
Very predictable, especially in the Indiana game. It seemed like it'd be a short pass and then a run and then be 3rd and 8 And then O'Connor would be, you know, either pressured or someone would drop the ball. Mm-hmm. Or it just, like you said, everything, it's not just Tyler O'Connor. Offensive line has had its struggles, obviously getting the push for LJ and Gerald Holmes to be able to have success. But, you know, the injuries on defense as well. Mm-hmm. Malik McDowell, Jamal Williams and Taysom Hill totaled over 500 yards against Toledo. You know, Taysom Hill is a dual-threat quarterback. If they're both running the ball in the first half before McDowell can come back, mm-hmm. That could be bad news. You don't want to get a shootout with this team.
No.
I don't – as much as, you know, MSU has potential to score points, I just – especially with the play calling, unless Dave Warner just says, sure, here you go. Here's the playbook, Tyler. have a go at it. I don't see that happening. Spartan fans, you're calling for Tyler O'Connor to be gone. Uh-huh. Bench him. Who do you have? Brian Lewerke, he has 26 passing yards.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. I think, and this is another conversation I want to bring up as well, because we mentioned how on yesterday's show, I believe it was, Isaac, whether or not when you evaluate this game against BYU, whether or not we will see a Lewerke or a Terry, you know, out there on the football field. Because, everybody's calling for the head of Tyler O'Connor right now because he has not lived up to expectations. I think if this game, you know, gets to double digits at some point, and if MSU has a sizable lead, if everything is clicking, I think we eventually may see, you know, maybe a Lewerke or Terry get out there on the football field. But if it's close, you better believe that Tyler O'Connor will be in the game the entire time.
Well, and I disagreed with you about that earlier in the week just because I think that it's so important for a coach in today's pro or college professional sports, whatever it may be, to show faith in whoever they've got. Just because social media is so abuzz, that's so easy for these players to be vulnerable to a lot of insecurity and discomfort when it comes to their starting position. So somebody like Tyler O'Connor right now, who's more teetering on the starting position more than ever, I think you keep him in throughout, whether it's a good game, a decent game, whatever it may be. Only way you take him out is if this team is at risk of going 2-3 because of him directly. And then it might be for the betterment of the team.
So you think even if this is just a complete blowout in favor of Michigan State?
I said if it was 55-10 in the fourth quarter, you throw in Lewerke, you throw in Terry or whoever
because,
you want.
Because really think that that MSU can do a better job in preparing the next generation of whoever that quarterback is. You know what I mean? And the only way you do that is by giving that individual or those individuals more reps, in-game reps, the season prior to taking over the you know, the keys of the car, basically.
I definitely see that perspective.
You know what I mean? Because that was the problem with Andrew Maxwell. Well, you know, he didn't have that experience, and you know, yeah. Mark D'Antonio and that coaching staff got criticized left and right for you know, why didn't we see Maxwell at all the year prior? I mean, he should have got more reps out there. He should have got more experience, and that was the big criticism on how they handled that. So I think they need to groom. If you are, there's no reason to keep your starting quarterback in the game if it's an immense blowout, and if you see no value in just keeping him in the game. You know what I mean? Why not groom Lewerke or Terry for next year by getting them a few reps in this matchup?
Well, I agree with you there. And that if it's a blowout, if it's just for the sake of let's throw on this guy because all of our other second and third strings are in,
right.
Do it. What I want to see, though, is not in a position where people could really stir up some controversy about the position. Because, like I said, Tyler O'Connor won this position hands down in training camp. There's not a better option.
There's not. I totally agree with you on that. All right, let's get score predictions. Let's start with Zach. Who wins and what score do you got?
I think Michigan State, they need the win, and I think they'll pull it out. I'll say 28-24, and they're not going to be able to cover the spread.
Close. Okay. What about you, Griffin?
I think MSU wins as well. I think they bounce back 31-24.
Isaac?
20-17, just like I said. So two picks for the spread, or against the spread, rather, one against. So
I'm going 27-17 MSU.
Okay. So.
Folks, what do you think, though? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also chime in via social media. Tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR _sports, or even go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Hit our first break. When we come back, we hope to have Tom Anastas on the line, head coach of the Michigan State hockey team. Fresh off of Media Day, and the green and white game will take place on Sunday afternoon. That and more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Yes, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I don't know why Isaac just played that music. It's just another day.
Oh, no, we've got an idea, people. And there's a reason why Brian Lewerke threw for 26 passing yards as well. Credit to Zach Swiecicki for finding out that stat. But anyway,
that was pretty good.
We want to wish Al a happy birthday all collectively, and weren't able to fit it in too well into the first segment, but happy birthday on behalf of all of us, Al.
I did a good job of not even allowing you guys to even bring it up in a very natural way in that first segment. I just talked the entire time right to MSU football. If there was any gap for you to do it, it would have been right there. So thank you so much to Isaac. But you know, birthdays are so funny, though, dude, because, you know, I was chatting with Zach and Griffin before the show, and it's like, you know, when you hit 18, yeah, you know, you celebrate because you're legal. You know what I mean? 21, you can finally go to the bar and buy a pop. You know what I mean? And then after that, it's just you're getting older. You know what I mean? Like, maybe at 25 because you can finally rent a car. Wait, is that the craziest rule you ever heard of?
Wait, that's real?
Yeah, that's real. You cannot rent a car. At least, I don't know, maybe Zach or Griffin maybe know otherwise, but I think just in Michigan, maybe just a Michigan thing, but you can't rent a car until you're 25, which is, it's nuts to me. So
that's insane. Yeah,
that's not even a big milestone. So, but anyway, thank you so much, Isaac. I really appreciate that, and much thanks to everybody and who have reached out to me via text. My phone is blowing up right now. Actually, during that first segment, my phone started ringing as we started breaking down the Michigan State and BYU game because people are still calling me and wishing me a happy birthday. So much thanks, and I love you all. All right. All right, moving on, folks. Let's get to our guest for this afternoon's Current Sports. He has certainly been on our airwaves multiple times before as he revs up for yet another year at the helm of Michigan State hockey. We now invite the head coach of that very squad, Mr. Tom Anastas, to Current Sports. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great today. How are you?
Oh, always good chatting with you, my friend. First off, I mean, what's the excitement like for you? I mean, the season right around the corner, green and white game happening on Sunday. You got to be jumping for joy right now, right, Tom?
Yeah, it's that time of year. We're all pretty fired up to play. You know, school started back in late August, and we've been here kind of putzing along a little bit in limited time. And as of last Saturday, we've now been on the ice for a week, and I think guys are really anxious to kind of get going. So we play a week from tonight at Lake Superior. We open our season, and we're going to use the green and white game as another way to help us prepare. So we're excited to get going.
Without a doubt. Now, diving into this team this season, Tom, I want to talk about the youth, of course. That really has been one of the main headlines coming into this season. You have 11 new players in all. How did you go about building team chemistry both on the ice and off of it during this offseason?
That's a great question. Actually, we're working at it every day in a variety of different ways. So, you know, there's certainly been a few things we've done off the ice, in particular our upperclassmen. We've really put it upon their shoulders to reach out to the newcomers and make sure they're integrated in a variety of different ways, whether it's here at the rink or whether it's in away from the rink type activities. So that has gone well. We have had our freshmen here since July when they took some summer classes. So the guys who trained during the course of the summer, the returning guys, actually worked out with them on campus during the summer. So that was a good opportunity for them to meet each other. And we've done little things. We had an outside group in called the program that took us through 2 days of leadership and team building exercises. When we started our early season in the restricted time period, we broke up into teams each week, and we created small group and team competitions and rewarded teams who won and so on, and we made sure we moved guys around. We've had team dinners together away from here, which went good. We went bowling the other night. Of course, we played an exhibition game last week. So I think it's part of the process, but you're starting to see the guys really integrate, and we don't want to have factions on the team, and we want to make sure that the newer guys are integrated with the returning guys, and I think we're making good progress in that regard.
Now, with so many new names this upcoming year, Tom, who are some names that you think MSU hockey fans are really going to get to know well this year? Who do you think has a really high ceiling for really starting off with a bang?
You know, I think there's a number of guys who come in here who've had a lot of success at the previous levels. And of course, the question is always, how will that translate to this level and how long will it take them? But to give you some examples of guys that I expect to play some meaningful minutes early in the season, I'd start with Taro Hiroshi, who's a player from Calgary. He's a highly, highly skilled player and has real good on-ice intelligence and offensive dynamics. Patrick Kortarenko is a player that comes out of the U.S. national program and and he's going to get a lot of attention. But he'll remind many people, if they were Red Wing fans, he kind of moves around the rink like Pavel Datsyuk, and that was his idol growing up playing. And you'll see some similarities in his style of hockey. You look back on the blue line, you have Mitch Elliott, who is a true freshman and came from Muskegon in the USHL and is a great hockey mind. His dad happens to be the color analyst on Red Wing games, and so he's got good bloodlines in the game as well. And then a couple other forwards that I think had real good starts in our exhibition game. Logan Landon is a left winger who's got a heck of a shot on him and scored almost 30 goals last year in the USHL. And Sam Saliba, both of these two guys are a little older freshmen. They'll be turning 21 their freshman year, and they come in with some maturity that I think will make a real impact. And then there's John Letheman, who's a goaltender, who I think will compete for some playing time this year as a freshman. Big guy, both two goaltenders this season. In fact, all three of our goaltenders are 6'2" or above, and many a returning player 6'5". So that's going to be a different dynamic people can see in goal coming off of Jake Hildebrand's last 4 years, where he was kind of a smaller goaltender, more athletic in today's world of hockey. But I think Johnny Letheman will have a chance to play as a freshman as well.
Yeah, and speaking of Letheman, I saw from a few of your statements on Media Day that, I want to talk about the situation in net when it comes to Letheman and also Ed Minnie. I mean, you stated that you plan on playing both early on. What's that competition going to be like, Tom?
I think it'll be good competition, actually. Ed has really worked hard in the offseason. He's been the understudy for Jake Hildebrand the last couple of years. I've watched him right in front of our eyes here kind of grow up, and I think he's anxious to try to take that net and try to own that net. And yet at the same time, I told him to go home last summer knowing that we're going to create competition here. So I don't want him to come and just make an assumption that he's going to be the guy who's going to play. So he had a very productive summer. He came back to school in very good shape. He's working really hard. I think everybody's confidence around him, his teammates, the coaching staff is all growing, and I think his confidence is growing, and he needs experience. So I think both of the guys need experience and need opportunities to play, and they'll both get it. And, we're going into the season wide open. If there's one guy that just clearly surfaces, we would go with a one goalie system. If both guys seem to be really raising their game and competing and giving us chances to win every night, then, we're not opposed to considering a two-goalie system or something otherwise, or some kind of goalie rotation. So we're going into the season open-minded, but I think that will be a position that, as guys gain experience, we'll get very consistent play.
And competition like that always brings out the best, right, Tom?
Without a doubt. I think that may be the most important dynamic we have on our team this year. Last year, between an early departure and a season-ending injury that happened before the season, we were really shorthanded in numbers back on defense, and it really, really made it challenging both for the guys who were playing because of the kind of minutes they had to play, and even from a coaching perspective, being able to rotate guys through and maybe even moving guys in and out of the lineup at times. So this year, in all positions, up at forward, we have five lines. On defense, we have eight defensemen we can rotate through that I think some of which will, be competing for time, who haven't established themselves yet. And even in goal, that's the case. So I think that's real healthy. I think it'll push guys to bring it every day and know when they come to practice every day and are getting evaluated that they have to be well prepared and pushed to get better every day. So I think that dynamic is a good one that we have right now. And as long as we can stay healthy, I think that can be an asset to our team.
If you're joining us just now here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the head coach of the Michigan State hockey team, Tom Anastas. Now, Tom, I want to rewind the clock just not too far from long ago, I should say. Of course, that exhibition on Sunday, you played Toronto. You outshot Toronto, actually, 34-15. What did you see in that 2-2 draw last weekend that you liked about your squad?
Well, I really liked the number of offensive opportunities we created. We actually had 80 attempts, which is a very, very high number. And so that was the good part. The bad part was, meaning we either had shots blocked or we missed the net 40-some times, and that's just not acceptable. So you know, really use that game as an opportunity to kind of evaluate where we are from a personnel perspective. We only have practiced one day, actually. We got on the ice as a team for a full practice, our first official practice on Saturday, the day before. And so we didn't have much organized or in place from a team organization standpoint. We had no forecheck, no neutral zone play, no power play or penalty kill. We just went out and played hockey. And so I thought it was really positive. I really liked the energy the guys played with. I liked the speed in which we played with. I liked overall our puck movement. And I certainly liked offensively. We showed some dynamics that we haven't seen here in a while. So those were all positive, but that was just a real start to trying to get better and getting ready for the start of the season.
Now, Tom, I briefly want to talk about last year for you all, 10-23-4, and you mentioned how you had guys playing just a crazy amount of minutes because you guys were so shorthanded. Tom, for you, what has the frustration been like here at MSU? And how do you not go crazy when you hear the criticism from Spartan fans who want to see this team banking on championships as soon as possible?
Yeah, well, that's the goal, and it is a difficult process. It takes time, which requires patience. And so sometimes, I guess, in my role, you have to just stay focused on the objectives. We believe in our plan. We sometimes have to readjust the plan given dynamics and circumstances, and you sometimes tend to look and get distracted by, oh, geez, what could have been, and if this guy didn't leave early, where would we be? And, you know, we've had some early departures that we didn't really anticipate, and, you're going to have those, but we're trying to rebuild our roster. We're trying to rebuild our depth, and we're at a place where, you know, we probably get hit by that stuff a little more when we do lose guys or guys go down with injuries than we were ready for. So we just have to stay focused on what we believe will get us to that championship level. We really believe, we're on the right path. We certainly had to readjust from some challenges last year, and that was both disappointing, and yet I think when you look at a negative situation as we did, there's a lot of character that was shown throughout that process by many, both on the coaching staff and certainly amongst the playing group. So we're going to continue to forge forward, believe in each other, believe in ourselves, and we will accomplish our goals without a doubt.
The right mindset to have for sure, Tom. Now, sometimes I would look at, how games went for you guys last year, and I would see your demeanor in the press conferences, and especially late in the year. I mean, at some point, that has to weigh on you, and I could see the frustration at times. At any point last year, did the job stop being fun at all for you, Tom?
The job never stopped being fun. It's an incredible challenge, which to me is invigorating. I knew when I came and took the job, it was going to be very difficult. So I've been very well prepared for that. Losing wears on you, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. And that's not something you ever want to get used to, that's for sure. But I think for me, again, staying focused on what we're trying to achieve, knowing that there are dynamics within your control and some outside of your control. And so, again, I think the more you listen to the noise or you get distracted by things other than what your focus needs to be on, that gets you off track. I thought for the most part we were able to do a pretty decent job in remaining focused. We know some of the challenges we're dealing with. And I'll tell you the other part, Al. Being at Michigan State, having the support system that we have, having the other coaches there to support you, knowing what you're going through, that's very meaningful. And I don't know what it's like at other schools, but we're very fortunate. I'm very fortunate to be where I am with the kind of people from the president right on down through Mark Hollis and the rest of the coaches. This is a great place to be, and people know that we have a challenging dynamic. I think people have been patient and continue to understand, the process we're going through. But I think all of that really helps because you're right. There was lots of time last year that was very challenging, but I couldn't think of a better place to be than here.
And you know what I love about you, Tom? I mean, you're a man who's never been afraid to dream big. And with that said, what are the goals for this team, realistic goals for this team this upcoming year?
Well, you know, we have so much newness that we have focused right in front of us. And to be a good team, we're focusing on the process of being a good team as opposed to the immediate results. And we all want to win, and you go into every game preparing to win. But I think when you bring so many new guys into an environment, you've got to look at becoming a really good practice team, really forming good habits that translates and are consistent every single day, because, you know, you're trying to build trust amongst your teammates and one another, and there's no better way of building trust with one another than knowing what you're going to get out of somebody. So, you know, we've set some real, our focus has been real narrow on the immediate objectives of trying to become a good practice team, a good cohesive group, a group that has a very high standard of work habits. And I think more importantly, as the next days and weeks go on, we've got to be a team that creates an identity that we can embrace. I thought one of the challenges of our season last year was our team never really developed an identity. And I don't think teams can be successful. Any organization can be successful if you don't. And each and every team is always a little bit different. And so the year before, we really had a certain identity that everybody embraced, and we weren't able to duplicate that last year. So I think establishing an identity early is a main objective of our team as well.
And I'm sure many MSU hockey fans are going to be thrilled to see what that identity is as the year unfolds. All right, now we'll be remiss if I didn't bring this up, Tom. Final question for you here. The idea of honoring Ron Mason with his initials on the helmet and, of course, on the ice. What did Coach Mason mean to you?
Well, geez, lots of different things. He impacted me in so many different ways. My coaching philosophy, in many ways how I viewed the game. Certainly as a person, he impacted me on, you know, many things that I did, both within the sport and outside of the sport. I always refer to my locker room MBA as my highest form of education, because I learned so much by sitting in that locker room, both as a player and as an assistant coach, and listening to him talk about so many things, both inside and outside the game. And for me personally, you know, he was a guy who really kind of kindled my passion to be in the sport beyond being a player. And so that's where my interest in coaching came from. That's where my interest in being involved in the business of the sport came from. And, you know, he even kind of recruited me into my CCHA role many years ago when I didn't really think I had an interest in that. So he impacted my life in so many different ways. To me, I think it's just appropriate, you know, the impact he had, not just on the hockey program here, but the entire athletic department and our general community in the greater Lansing area. To, you know, we'll be wearing his initials on our helmet, and it'll be on our home rink all this season. So I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, it's a great way to honor a man who had such a profound impact here at Michigan State University. Tom Anastas, head coach of the Michigan State hockey team. Tom, thank you so much for your time, and looking forward to seeing you guys on the ice for the green and white game.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me today.
You got it. All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports by hitting you with Reflection Friday and also giving you just a really brief preview on the Michigan and Rutgers game. I think that's going to be a huge blowout. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with Tom Anastas, head coach of the Michigan State hockey team. If you missed that chat or any chat or segment or moment that we've had here on Current Sports, you know that we post each and every show after we get off the air at 2 p.m. right on our website at WKAR.org. Catch the Current Sports podcast simply by visiting WKAR.org. If you want to catch the latest Current Sports Radio show, we usually post it around 3 p.m. Quick update before we go into Reflection Friday to close out this week here on the show. The Toronto Blue Jays, Texas Rangers underway. The Blue Jays have a 2-0 lead. Love the MLB playoffs, folks. I don't know if you guys have been watching this far, but very entertaining, to say the least. And also, he's back. Tiger Woods has officially committed to play in the season opener for the PGA Tour in Napa, California, which is the Safeway Open. So, yeah, he's back. I don't know how good he'll be when he does make that return, but I'm crossing my fingers just to show some semblance of what he was back in the day, all right? Reflection Friday, our favorite segments, interviews, and moments from the show here throughout the week, and maybe a few stories that we didn't even get a chance to bring up. So Reflection Friday, here we go. All right, well, Reflection Friday. Isaac, for me, you know, it's hard, probably not my favorite moment throughout the week here on the show, but the most, without a doubt, probably the most interesting moment we've had on the show is just, moments, I should say, plural, is just the dialogue concerning Tyler O'Connor. You know what I mean? The whole, you know, really putting a finger on the pulse of Spartan Nation and getting their thoughts on what they think of this senior who's stepping into some big shoes, trying to fill, you know, fill the shoes of Connor Cook, the most decorated quarterback in Spartan history. A lot of it has been fair, but maybe even more, that criticism has been foul. What you read on social media and the personal jabs that Tyler has taken, I don't know how an athlete deals with that criticism in the 2016 world of social media. Crazy.
Yeah, you don't want to look at your account after a rough game or a loss of any type, even when you play decent like he did against Indiana. Mm-hmm. My moment would have to be the dialogue surrounding Odell Beckham Jr. and how you and I sparked a great change. Because I'm not sure if you saw it, but Odell Beckham actually went down a line to every single veteran or soldier who was on the field of the New York Giants game and shook their hand. It was a really laudable moment from the Giants wide receiver, and something where I think it shows that this kid is a decent guy. He just has his problems with frustration on the field. And again, we do make too much of it. At the same time, we make too much of it because everybody wants to.
Yeah,
you know?
Without a doubt. I hear you on that. And when did that happen? When did Odell do that?
I believe that was last night, if I'm not mistaken.
During a game?
I don't know.
Because
I just
they
saw,
didn't play.
Yeah, I just saw it on The Score, which is, okay, you know, a social media platform. I'll have to do some research.
Yeah, because
that,
you know, last night was the Arizona and San Fran game, so I'm trying to figure out, maybe it was practice or something. I don't know. Who knows?
A week ago, they caught the Kaepernick thing late. Maybe they caught this late.
You know? Okay, I'm gonna check on that. But yeah, he's a decent guy, and you know, again, people love to hear drama, so you know, and they kind of blow it out of proportion. So I think Odell Beckham is going to learn from this without a doubt. All right.
Hey, and happy birthday.
Hey, thank you so much again, Isaac. Yeah, the big 2-6. All right. Thanks so much for all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Much thanks to Tom Manassas for joining us. We'll see you Monday. Be easy, people.